Chapter 9. The Storm Oak. Going Back. Making Midas Proud. For almost an hour we plunged into the great darkness of the forest, blind and desperate. In what seemed an alarmingly short time, we lost all sight of the great conflagration we had left behind. The woodland, dense and ancient, blocked it out.
"Are we lost?"
Elena mumbled in a faltering voice. "No," I assured her. Kersha, Medea, and I had spent many hours hunting and tracking in the wild woodlands, and I knew these fringes well enough, though in darkness there was an unhelpful depth of mystery and unfamiliarity. Once in a while I noticed a landmark, a jutting tooth of stone, an old tree, a turn in the terrain. Usually I recognized such things once we were right on them and took a moment to adjust our bearings. Twice speeders passed overhead, their stab lights backlighting the dense foliage. If they'd possessed heat trackers, we would have been dead. But they were hunting by searchlight alone. At last, I privately rejoiced, the enemy has made an error. We reached the oak. Medea had named it the Storm Oak. It had been hundreds of years old when lightning had killed it and left it a splintered, leafless giant, like a shattered castle turret. The bark was peeling from its dead wood, and the area around it was crawling with grubs and rot beetles. It had grown in a hollow, sprouting from the dark soil overhang of a scarp 20 meters high. The oak itself was 50 meters tall from its vast, partly exposed root mass to its shattered crown, and 15 meters across the trunk. I scrambled down into the hollow beneath its roots. When the lightning had struck it, ages past, it had partially ripped the massive tree from the ground, creating a cavern under its mighty foundations. The dank hole was like a natural chapel, with roots serving as the cross members for the ceiling. The previous owners of Spaten House had, I had been told, used it as a chancel for private ceremonies. Medea and I had decided to use it as a hangar. No one else knew about this, except Kersha. We had all agreed it was a dark, secret place to stow a light aircraft. A bolt hole. I don't think we ever really imagined a doom falling on Spaten House, like the one that overwhelmed it that night, but we had played along with the idea it might be wise to keep one transport tucked out of sight. The transport in question was a monocoque turbofan flyer, handmade on Urdesh. Light, fast, ultra-maneuverable. Medea had purchased it 10 years before when she was bored, and had stored it in the main hangar at Spaten, until one notorious night while we were away on a case, when several junior staff members had decided to take it for a spin, it being so much more racy than the house shuttles and bulk speeders. They'd had the damage repaired by the time we got home, but Medea had noticed. Reprimands had followed. Weeks later, when we found the Storm Oak during a hunting trip and devised the notion of a last-ditch transport, Medea had moved the craft here. We never actually thought we'd have to use it for escape. It was just an excuse to park it away from the envious juniors. I stripped off the tarp and popped open the hatch. The cabin interior smelled of leather and the faint dampness of the forest. 6 meters long and finished in slate grey, the craft had a wedge-shaped cabin that tapered to a short, V-veined tail. There were 3 turbofan units, one fixed behind the cabin under the tail for main thrust, the other 2 mounted on stubby wings that projected from the cabin roof on either side. The wing units were gimbal-mounted for lift and attitude control. The cabin was snug, with 3 rows of seats. A single pilot seat in the nose, with 2 high-backed passenger seats behind it, and a more functional bench seat behind them, against the cabin's rear partition. I strapped myself in the pilot's seat and ran a pre-flight, to wake the systems up as Alina and Amos installed themselves in the pair of seats behind me. The instrument panel lit up green, and there was a low sigh as the fans began to turn. Alina closed the hatch. The leaf litter in the root cave began to twitch and flutter. We'd heard nothing from Vance since we entered the wild woodland. I reached out with my mind, urging them to hurry up. There was no answer. The plane's power cells showed about 75% capacity. There were no alert or dysfunction runes on the diagnostic panel. I went through a final check. The craft was armed with a light laslance, fitted discreetly under the nose in a fixed forward mount. We'd never used it, and the instruments showed it was offline. I entered a code to activate it, and the screen told me it was stowed for safety and non-functional. With the fan still idling, I got back out and went round to the flyer's nose, crouching down to look beneath. The lance, little more than a slender tube, was capped with a rubberized sleeve to muzzle the weapon and keep dirt out of the emitter. I fumbled with the sleeve and removed it. Pulling the safety sleeve off broke a wire clasp that allowed a small pin to be yanked out. The lance was enabled. I climbed back into the cabin, slammed the hatch, and checked the instruments. The weapon was now showing as online, and I activated the power-up function to charge its firing cells. I had just about finished when I felt it.
"Sir, what's wrong?"
Elena cried out as I gasped and lurched forward.
"Gregor,"
said Amos, alarmed. "I'm okay. It was Vance." A quick, terrible psychic shriek from the direction of the estate. A psyker in pain. I tried to raise him again, but there was nothing, except a blurry wall of background anguish. Then I heard, for a second, his mind urging Medea, urging her to run. Run, and not to look back. Again, I gasped as a second jolt of agony rippled through the mental spectrum.
"God, Emperor, damn it!"
I cursed, and threw the plane forward. The fans wailed. We were instantly surrounded by a maelstrom of leaves and dead twigs, which rattled and pinged off the fuselage and windows. I nursed out just a few centimeters of lift to clear the ground, with the wing fans angled straight down, and we edged forward out of the Storm Oak's root cave on minimum thrust. I kept one eye on the proximity scanner, which was throbbing red as it detected the structure enclosing us. As soon as it signaled that the tail boom had cleared the overhang of the root ball, I keyed in more lift and we rose, swirling the leaves of the clearing around us in a whirling eddy. We hovered and turned slowly, once, twice, as I let the Auspex's terrain tracker scan the area. Then I lined up.
Gregor?
Amos said, leaning forward and pointing over my left arm at the illuminated compass ball.
We're heading north.
Yes.
Goes without saying, north is the direction we came from.
Yes. Sorry, we're going back. I put the nose down. The wing jets whirred round to an aft three-quarter thrust in their socket mounts, and the craft raced off into the darkness. I swept us through the forest at something like 20 knots, lights off. Visibility was virtually zero, so I flew using a combination of the Auspex and the proximity scanner, reading the green and amber phantoms of tree boles and branches as they loomed, steering around and under. Every now and then I cut it too fine, and the collision alert sounded as something swept across the screen in vivid red. There were plenty of near misses, but only once did I hit something, a small branch that snapped away, thankfully. Amos and Alina both cried out involuntarily. "Relax," I urged them. We'd have made better and safer progress above the forest canopy, but I wanted to stay concealed for as long as possible. In vain, I reached out to find Vance's mind. Barely avoiding a massive low branch, we came down a long slope under the trees, and the Auspex showed me that we'd reached the edge of the woodland. The road was just ahead. Through the tree line, I could see light, pulsing white. Another flare. I cut the forward thrust and crept forward on down-angled jets, just a drifting hover. I could see out over the road and the fence, into the paddocks and scrub south of Speighton House we had toiled through on foot to make our escape. The whole area was bathed in a cold grey luminosity, a wobbling flicker cast by the dying flare. Black shapes, dozens of them, scrambled through the grasses and weeds, spread in a line, searching. "Medea," I willed. She couldn't answer. She was a blunt. But I prayed she could hear.
"Medea, I'm close."
There was a sudden surge of activity to the northeast, around a spinney of fintel trees. The flash of lasfire. Two fresh flares banged up, making everything harsh black and white. The raiders were moving towards the spinney. They had someone cornered, pinned down. I knew in my gut it was Medea. With my lights still off, I gunned the flyer forward, going low over the road and fence and across the paddock reaches. The downwash sliced awake in the grasses. Figures turned as we swept over them. By the flare light, I glimpsed carnival faces. I hugged the ground, scattering some of the raiders, and powered towards the spinney. Las flashes were coming my way now. My thumb flipped the safety cover off the control stick's firing stud. There was no aiming mechanism for the fixed lance except the craft itself. If the flyer was pointing at something, then the lance was too. I squeezed the stud. The lance fired a continuous beam for as long as I held down the trigger. It had no pulse or burst option. A line of bright yellow light, pencil thin, sliced out from under the nose and ripped into the scrub by the spinney. I saw mud and plant debris spray up from the furrow it cut. The plane's nose was dipped. I was falling short. I nudged the flyer's snout up and fired again. Two raiders collapsed, sliced through by the beam. Several saplings and a mature fintel at the edge of the spinney came down in a shower of leaves. With the plane moving, it was damn hard to aim at all. 20 meters short of the trees, I pulled up in a shallow hover. Serious fusillades were zipping at us now. The craft wobbled as shots struck the lower hull. I fired for a third time, holding the flyer level and gently rotating her right to left as I held the trigger down. Raiders threw themselves flat to avoid the lethal beam of light passing over them. Several didn't make it. The lance simply sectioned them, clean through flesh, bone, and armor. I must have hit a power pack or a grenade, because one exploded in a sheet of flame. More shots thumped into the fuselage from the rear. I surged forward again, sweeping around the west side of the trees. I saw Medea on the auspecs. She was running clear of the spinney at the north end, breaking cover. It took me a moment to find her by eye, just a dot in the long weeds. A bright dot. She was wearing her father's cerise jacket. I realized she must have come out into the open to give me a chance to set down and reach her. The thin trees in the spinney were far too tightly packed. Las bolts chased her. She turned and fired back with a handgun, still running. "You're clear. Get down." I saw her turn, seeing where I was. Then she was hurled face first into the grass by a Las shot. "Medea!" I accelerated hard, pushing us back into our seats. "Amos, get ready with the side hatch." I got as close into the patch of weeds where she had fallen as I dared. The downthrust of the plane could cause serious injuries. We jolted hard as I set down, throwing the throttles to idle. Amos was opening the hatch, but he was old and slow and scared. Elena couldn't reach over because he was blocking her. I leapt out, pushing Amos back into his seat, and thumped down into the wet nettles and burry fex grass. The night air was sudden and cold. Another flare bloomed above us, and I realized the echoing spit I could hear was the enemy guns discharging in my direction. I ran forward, searching for her. "Medea! Medea!" Now I was on the ground, it was nigh on impossible to tell where in the thigh-high grass she'd fallen. "Medea!" A Las round stung the air to my left. The closest of the raiders, running across the paddock, was only a few dozen meters away. I realized I was unarmed. I'd given my bolt gun to Sastry, and Barbarisater and the staff were stowed in the flyer behind me. No, I had Medea's Glavian needle pistol. It was still in my coat pocket. I dragged it out and fired, aiming it with both hands. My first shot hit the nearest raider, and he fell over into the grass. My second shot winged another, and he, too, disappeared into the rough scrub. I glanced at the needler's mechanical dial. 2 rounds left. Bending low, I searched the grass with increasing frenzy as shots whined in close. "Medea!" And there she was, face down in the thick scrub. There was a bloody, burned hole in the back of her silk jacket. I dragged her up and threw her limp body over my shoulder. The auto pistol she had been using slipped heavily from her slack hand. I stooped and grabbed it. The clip was half full. I swung round, trying to keep her from falling, and fired the auto pistol wildly at the advancing enemy, relishing the satisfying roar and recoil of the hefty solid slug weapon. Needle guns were elegant and deadly, but you barely knew you'd fired them. This thing, chrome and square-nosed, kicked like a yerf, and spent brass cases rang as they flew from the pumping slide. I started to run back to the plane, expecting a shot in the back any moment. I heard Laz fire, but it wasn't coming from behind me. Elena Coy was braced in the open side hatch of the flyer, laying down covering fire with a Laz pistol I hadn't realized she was carrying. Amos had got into the back, onto the bench seat, giving Elena access to the door. Amos reached out and gathered Medea in his arms. Elena seized her too, and the three of us bundled the girl into the rear beside Amos. I was wishing so hard she wasn't dead. Elena fired one last time and fell back into the passenger seats. I jumped in, yelling at her to slam the hatch. There was no time to strap in. Multiple shots slammed against the aircraft's flank. A window panel burst. Dents appeared in the inner skin, spalling fragments off the hull. I hoisted us off the ground and spun us to face the charging raiders. I think, although I can't be sure, I said something singularly unedifying as I pressed the trigger, something like, "Eat this, you bastards." I don't believe I actually hit any of them, but, by the Golden Throne, they took cover. "Sir!" Elena yelled over the scream of the turbofans. A ball of light was approaching from the other side of the spinney. I couldn't see the speeder, just the stab light, shining like a white dwarf against the night sky. Time to go. I kept it low, but pulled away south across the paddock at full thrust, accelerating all the time. We were doing 40-45 knots by the time we reached the road. The woods loomed. In an instant I weighed my options. Go high over the trees and be a clear target for any pursuer. Go through, lights off, and drop speed dramatically to avoid collision. Go through, lights on. I picked the third way. The flyer's lamps kicked on, lighting a cone of space ahead of us. Even with the lights and the Auspex and the proximity alarm, this course was borderline suicide. Within a few seconds, having only just avoided a head-on smash with a mature spruce, I had to drop the speed to 30.
You're going to get us killed,
Elena wailed.
Be quiet.
The black shapes of tree trunks whipped past on either side, forcing me to turn and bank hard, repeatedly, jagging left, then right, then left again. Branches, some as massive as trees in their own right, swept over us like arches or under us like bridges. Several times we exploded through sprays of canopy, the engine out alarm pipping as the fans fought to clear away the leaf debris choking them. The phantoms on the scanner screen were almost constantly red. Elena started to say an imperial prayer.
Say one for us all, I barked. Amos, what's Medea's condition?
She's alive, thank the stars, but her breathing's not right. Perhaps a collapsed lung or internal cauterization. She needs a medic, Gregor.
She'll get one. Make her as comfortable as you can. There's a medipack in the locker behind you. Patch her wound.
Apart from being an insane death wish, flying at speed through dense, ancient forest at night was baffling. Simply avoiding collision required such concentration, I kept losing my bearings. A few forced turns to the left, say, pointed us east. Correcting that and evading an oak to the right, and we were turned west. We were zigzagging through the wild woodland, and a zigzag is not the fastest route of escape. At least four of the five speeders I had seen during the raid were after us. Two were following us directly through the trees, about 500 meters behind us. The other two had gone up and over the tree cover, making much better time, chasing hard to pass over us and get ahead. They were ex-military models. I'd seen that much from the glimpse I'd got of them parked on the lawns. Bigger power plants than this nimble Urdeshi turbofan. Bigger and better armoured. And their cannons, mounted on racks in the doorframes, meant they could essentially fire in any direction. They didn't have to be pointing at their target. The Auspex started to chime, and I saw hard light flash down through the leaf cover above us, breaking through in shafts like a sun breaking through low cloud. One of the flyers above the forest was matching us for speed. I jinked and evaded, not so much to lose him as to avoid instant obliteration against the bole of a tree. I saw the forest floor convulse and ripple as the door gunner fired down at us. So I banked hard, one wing down, right around a colossal fanwood, and shot off in a westerly direction. The overhead lights disappeared for a moment, but then reappeared, travelling fast, parallel to us, to the left. A tree, flashing past to my right, lost its bark in a blitz of diagonal crossfire. Damn them! I was fairly certain they had no heat or motion-tracking instruments. They were following the glow of my lamps underlighting the canopy. I killed the lights, but unfortunately didn't kill my speed. The proximity alarm squealed, and though I yanked on the stick, we struck a trunk a grazing blow. We wobbled hard. The engine out alert shrilled a continuous note. The starboard fan had stalled. I went to hover and pressed restart on the starboard unit, hoping that it had simply been jolted dead by the impact. If the casing or the fan itself were buckled, restarting might be very messy indeed for all of us. The dead fan turned over and coughed. I tried again. Another mewling wheeze. 20 meters behind us, the forest was coming to pieces in a deluge of wood pulp, bark scraps, and pulverized foliage, as the flyer high above tried to smoke us out with a sustained salvo. The starboard fan whipped into life on the third attempt. Staying at hover, I played the stick back and forth and side to side, pitching and yawing the craft, dropping its nose and then its tail, dipping the stubby wings, just to make sure I hadn't lost any attitude control. It seemed all right. I looked over my shoulder and saw Elena staring at me, her face corpse pale. Amos was cradling Medea.
Are we all right, Gregor? He whispered.
Yes, I'm sorry about that.
The glade to our left suddenly lit up with vertical shafts of light and was pummeled by cannon fire. They were still searching blindly. I had a sudden moment of recall. A void duel. Seriously outnumbered. Midas flying by the seat of his well-tailored pants. I remember him glancing at me from the controls of the gun cutter and saying, "Mouse becomes cat. Mouse becomes cat." Still hovering, I rotated the flyer towards the blitzed glade and then raised the nose slowly, pointing it at the light source above the trees, aiming it at the light source. I squeezed the toggle, just for a second. The lance beam seared up into the backlit canopy. There was a brief flash, and then a 9-ton metal fireball that had once been a speeder simply dropped down into the clearing, smashing through the branches, ripping apart and hurling flaming debris in all directions. "Scratch one," I said, smugly. Well, it's what Midas would have said. There were lights behind us, zooming closer through the forest. Keeping the lamps off, I nudged us away from the wreckage inferno and turned in behind a twisted antler bark that had slumped sideways in old age. Curtains of moss draped from its weary branches. I watched the lights approach, easing the nose around to follow the nearest one. They had slowed down, hunting for signs of us. The nearest lights were tantalizingly close, but obscured by a line of fat oaks. The other one zipped in towards the blazing crash site. I swung us up, leading the flyer's nose towards the coasting speeder. It came into view, stab lights sweeping the woodland floor. I fired again. The shot was pretty good. It sheared the tail boom off the speeder. With its rear end discharging blue electrical arcs, it spun out of control, end over end. It made a mess of a giant fanewood, and vice versa. The other speeder came out from the cover of the oaks, firing right at us. The shots rent aside the curtains of moss. I realized someone had had the sense to bring night vision goggles. They could see us. I tried one shot, missed, and then turned tail, kicking in the floods and raising the speed as high as I dared. The proximity alert screen was just an overlapping red blur now, and we were all thrown around by the violent turns I was forced to make. The pilot of the speeder chasing us was good, distressingly good. Like the Merc foot troops, he was clearly the best of his kind money could buy. He stuck to my tail like a leech. Pushing 38 knots, I caromed through the dense trees, pulling G's sometimes when the turns demanded it. He raced after me, following my lead and enjoying the gain of my turbo-wash slipstream. The chase was verging on balletic. We snaked and crisscrossed between trees, banked and looped like dancing partners. Several times I stood on a wingtip coming round one side of a big tree, and he mirrored the move coming round the other. Fans screaming, I pulled a hard turn to the north, and then rolled, reversing, turning south. He overshot, but was back a moment later, accelerating fast onto my tail. Tracer rounds winked past me. Two hard jolts came in quick succession, and the instruments confirmed what I suspected. We'd been hit. I was losing power, not much, but enough to suggest a battery had been ruptured or disconnected. He was firing again, stitching lines of tracer shells spat past the cockpit. Now I had distress runes lighting up on my control panels. Something drastic was needed, or we'd be his latest cockpit stripe. I thought about cutting the fans and dropping to make him overshoot, but at the speed we were going, we'd crash and burn. "Hold on," I yelled.
"Oh, shit," said Alina Coy.
I killed the thrust and went vertical. We exploded up through the canopy into the sky, shredding branches around us. The speeder shot by underneath. Astonished, he tried to bank round to re-engage, but my manoeuvre had flummoxed him. Just for a moment, but long enough. He didn't trim his thrust as he tried to make the turn. A tree took one stabilizer wing clean off, and that was the last I saw of him, except for the series of impact explosions he made under the trees below us. I was shaking, my hands numb. Exhaustion punched into me. The concentration had been so terribly intense. But Midas, I was sure, would have been proud of me. He'd forever been trying to teach me his skills, and he'd declared on more than one occasion that I'd never make a combat pilot. In his opinion, I had the essential reflexes and strength, but I never saw the big picture. And it was always that last overlooked detail that got you killed. That last overlooked detail came in from the north, across the treetops, autocannons flashing.